With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public, free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom, and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Time to say good morning again to Farzan Irani here to help us join the Money Dots on Money Talks, our regular Thursday feature. Farzan, good to have you back. Hope you're well.
Yes, I'm well. Good morning to you and the listeners, mate.
Okay, now, I'm finally getting around to making a start on The Great Taking, the book by David Rogers Webb, and I know that you're across it. I'm just curious, and maybe others have followed your advice and kind of got a copy and just about to launch into it. Is there anything, are there any moments in that book that will really make us go, wow?
Yes, absolutely, my friend. That's what I'll do today. Obviously, people need to read the book to understand the bigger context and the information he's provided. But what I'll do is I'll just summarize some of the key points, just give a gist of what he's saying could happen based on the past as well. And then people can read the book and make up their own minds and stuff like that, because we can't go through the entire book and exact quotes and all that kind of stuff.
All right. So a bit later on in our chat, we'll get to that. Couple of three stories that I think you want to mention this morning. And I think we've talked many times about the Depositor Compensation Scheme, the DCS, and that compensates people for up to an amount if the bank goes bust or whatever. It's delayed. Is it delayed more now, a longer delay than we expected?
Yeah, that's right. A couple of days back, the finance minister has come out and she said it's going to be delayed again. So let me remind our listeners, obviously, this has been in the works for a couple of years, and New Zealand and Israel are the only countries that don't have one in place right now. New Zealand legislation was passed to cover our government, the government to cover guarantees. And what's happened, mate, is it was supposed to be start of 2024, where it was supposed to be launched. Then last year on the radio, we obviously discussed, because there was information that they had decided to delay it because they have to have consultations and all that kind of stuff. And they said it'll be launched around October 2024. So October of this year, which is still 8-9 months away. And now they've come out and said it'll be mid-2025. So go figure, because they've got more consultations to do and they still have to get things ready. And as I've highlighted before, this is not something where they're even guaranteeing it. They're supposedly going to take a small percentage from the banks or the deposit-taking institutions to insure their book. And the cost will be passed on to your average people, average customers, through your mortgage home loan rates and lower deposit rates. As you can see, most banks have still made a profit, even though it's been smaller. They've still made quite big profits. But yeah, unfortunately, Kiwis are going to have to wait till sometime. Now they've not even given us a month. It's mid-2025. So by the time that comes around, mate, there'll be fireworks.
What could the delay be, do you think?
Well, they're just saying, we have to have a consultation. They're opening up something to the public in May this year. And then they're going to have more consultations and this and that and all that kind of stuff as they work things out. And then they say it'll be kind of ready by the end of the year, but then it might take us 5 or 6 months to launch it to the public. I don't understand when they say 6 months to launch it to the public. If everything's ready, just come out and say it's ready. You're covered for $100,000.
Well, what possible consultation are you after? What, people saying, no, I don't think it's a good idea? I mean, no one's going to say it's a bad idea. What sort of consultation?
I wish I knew, mate. I wish I was a fly on the wall. I'm not sure. But as I said, and as we talked today about the Great Taking as well, things have been put in place for the last 20, 30, 40 years, and this is going to be the Great Taking. So, yeah, let's just keep wasting time. And it doesn't have an impact in the bigger scheme of things. If David Rogers Webb, the way he's highlighted, and as I've mentioned, around the world, even if there's deposit guarantees, we saw what happened in America last year with a deposit guarantee of $250,000. There's so many banks that still collapsed, right? I think about six in total, from what I've been reading. And in spite of a government guarantee, people were withdrawing funds. And I think I read somewhere where in one day, Silicon Valley Bank had lost, just let me look at my notes, $42 billion in a day. And that's what collapsed SVB, because after the withdrawal, one day withdrawal of $42 billion, they were only left with a negative $1 billion balance on their balance sheet. And the next day they were bust. So yeah, bank runs are real.
Yeah, because delaying, you could read into that, okay, you want to make it as good as it could be, and it takes time to do that, and we have to delay, or we expect something to happen, and we don't. No one wants to be in the gun for $100,000 per customer, so delay, let the thing happen.
Yeah, exactly, mate. But how many people actually even have? If you think about the percentage of people who actually have 100,000 in credit balances and no other debt in New Zealand, you'd be surprised how few. The other day, I also came across something where they were talking about the top 1% of wealth around the world. And it said in New Zealand, the benchmark, I think, was 4.56 million, which I sent to a couple of my clients. So if you have a net worth of 4.56 million, when I say net, no debt, and your asset is, you're worth what it is after in the black, then you're supposed to be in the 1% of New Zealand, supposedly. So that's... But how many people just aren't done sitting there? Some people might have that, but they might also have a mortgage or debt sitting there, which is also something that they're talking in this, that they might also cover credit card balances, which are in credit, obviously, and also people with floating lines of credit.
Not your credit limit.
But if you have a $10,000 credit limit and you don't owe the bank anything, but let's say you put in an extra $5,000 on top because you're going to go on a holiday, so you got $15,000 to spend, you get that $5,000 back. And this is the thing, it's small in the bigger scheme of things. But again, last year, I think I'd read an article where in New Zealand, they said, just like they've done research in America, that if a New Zealand family had an emergency of $5,000, they would have to borrow to come up with it. Not a lot of people have $5,000 just sitting there. So that tells you the state of the economy and the hyper-financialization that's been imposed upon us, in a way. Now, over the last 40 years, with interest rates going lower and lower, people have borrowed more and more. And it's literally a bubble. And it's an everything bubble. And I'll explain that because first we had the share markets, and then your dot-com bust, which I have mentioned before, that went into the housing market. Because every time the Reserve Bank has a problem around the world, they reduce interest rates. Because everything is debt servicing. It's not about the debt amount. It's about debt servicing. So they took the interest rates lower. People could service mortgages. They had ninja loans, as we call them, no income, no job. As long as you can pay the interest, keep carrying on. And pre-GFC, sorry about that. Pre-GFC also, there were a lot of banks that were doing interest-only loans, right? They would give you 2-3-5 year interest-only loans because their house values were only going up. So their balance sheet was very well protected. After the housing bust, now obviously it's come to the top of the food chain, which is governments have to borrow. And governments have overborrowed, as we can see in America's case, 124% debt to GDP. In fact, I read an article the other day. They are spending $1 trillion every 100 days now. That is just a crazy, crazy amount. $1 trillion every 100 days, so every 3 months. So in a year, that's $4 trillion. And it is not sustainable, as I mentioned last year. It gets exponential, it gets to an exponential stage. And I think in the very first few chats I had mentioned, by 2026, 2027, most governments will default on their debt, which is where we're going to a sovereign debt default. And this is not me talking, some of the smartest people around the world saying governments will have to default. And the default happens either way. It doesn't mean you just don't pay your debt. It can happen in one of two ways. Either the governments go, we can't sustain this, we can't pay it, especially in Western countries where we've made a lot of promises that we cannot keep, free healthcare and this and that and all that kind of stuff. Or they print the money out of oblivion to meet those promises, and that's called a soft default because your money doesn't buy you anything and we're going into hyperinflation.
Yeah, I see that on that figure you just mentioned before, 40% of New Zealanders don't have $5,000 saved for emergencies.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's almost half, obviously. But that would probably include... quite a few folk who could, who could get the credit on the card too there. So it's probably even worse. I'm picking, the level of actual saved money would be lower probably. Now, here's the other thing too I wanted to get your comment on. Core Crown debt interest is forecast to hit 10 billion New Zealand dollars by 2027. That's only 4 years ago. That's 2% of GDP. It's under just under half of, well, just over a third, let's say, ultimately, that we spend on health, public health system, which you just mentioned. $10 billion will be the core crown debt interest forecast in 4 years, 2% of GDP. Is that high or low? Or
that's only the interest cost, right? You've got to look at the debt to GDP. And there's so many moving factors, Paul, in this, because a number is just a number unless it's put in context. And that's the thing. If the government spends so much into the economy, which is your fiscal spending, which I've mentioned before, there's your monetary and your fiscal. Now it's been fiscal because governments have to borrow because the citizens' balance sheet is tapped out. And this happened after the global financial crisis. People just can't borrow anymore unless interest rates were reduced. So now the can was kicked higher up the level. Governments have to borrow. Now the $10 billion, again, in context, might be a bit small, but that's assuming the tax take is really big. If we're in a recession, a severe recession, or even a depression, the tax take is going to be lower. So then that 2% could be 5, 6, 7% of GDP. And I also want to highlight this because I am one of these guys who just deep dives into everything, right? This is just kind of my nature. I just want people to understand when we say that New Zealand technically is not in a recession, let's say, what is growth? We're so focused on GDP and growth. So if you say New Zealand's GDP increased by 3% last year, let's say, this, we're talking about last year. I'm just doing a number. I don't know exactly the numbers right now. I don't have them in front of me, but people will understand this concept. So the economy grew by 3%, but inflation was 9%. So the economy actually went backwards and did not grow by 3%. Because if we had inflation at zero, then the economy grew by 3%. But because of inflation, everything was 9% more expensive, but the economy only grew by 3%. So if you technically think about it, the economy actually went backwards. So we are in a recession. We are not in a technical recession, as the government likes changing definitions, but we're already in a recession.
Yeah, well, the Prime Minister did say a month ago that the country was in a fragile state. Fragile.
Yeah, they're just laying the groundwork for what's coming next. The world is in trouble because the world debt is that high. It's not just New Zealand or America or anything. The global economy, there's so much debt. In fact, I can't remember the number right now, but your Bank for International Settlements and all these think tanks that actually have the numbers out, I think the global GDP is sitting at, again, I'm just going to make up a number, let's say 150 trillion, but the global debt was about 280 trillion. Now, how do you pay off 280 trillion in debt with 150?
You can't, right?
And this is also because the whole point was to keep reducing interest rates. And now people understand what I said at the start. 40 years back when interest rates, as you said, Paul, your mortgages were 18, 20%. For 40 years, it's gone down to zero. And in Japan and Europe, there were negative interest rates. So they got it to the bottom, and now interest rate cycle has turned, which is going up. You have no way of getting out of this. There is a default coming. Depending on who defaults this time, there is a major, and if you look at the book we're going to discuss, that is the plan. You hyper-financialize. You call it, everyone's calling it the everything bubble now, because as I said, there were stock bubbles. Then there's your housing bubble, and now there's your sovereign debt kind of bubble, which is already bursting, which caused SVB to collapse because as interest rates in America started going up, the bond value started losing value, and that's how banks go bust. And it's not just that. If you think about this, I want to explain this because I don't think I have explained in the past. If you're a bank, and if a bank has lent you, Paul, a mortgage over $1 million over 30 years, now in America, I'll give the American example, but people can think through this in New Zealand as well. But in America, because the rates are fixed for that 25 or 30 years, the bank is guaranteed a certain amount paid back over the 30 years. That's cash flow for the bank's revenue statement or whatever. Now, just like a bond, because it promises to pay back so much over the 30 years, as interest rates go up, the value of my repayments coming back to the bank go down. So when they have these MBS, which is mortgage-backed securities, or CMBS, which is commercial mortgage-backed securities, they lose value just like bonds, because when the interest rates go up, the future cash flows from that are inflation adjusted and you actually lose value. These are all the things that are sitting on banks' balance sheet and pension fund balance sheet. And just one last thing I'll throw in there. I had mentioned last year also, it's not just the banks, but this commercial property crisis is going to affect your pension funds, your insurance companies and all of that. I came across something just 3 days back. And this is a very good example. Just give me a second. I'm opening my phone up. So the Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board, okay, which is the biggest pension in Canada, has started selling off commercial properties. So it sold one commercial property that it has on its book at the end of 2023. It sold it. It doesn't own it 100%, right? It sold its 29% stake in 360 Park Avenue South. Guess for how much? For $1. It wanted to get that asset off its book. Yes, it did not own it 100%, but it sold 29% of its stake for $1. And it sold another building, which was in Santa Monica Business Park, for $38 million at the end of last year. That represents a 75% discount to what was paid at the time of purchase in 2018. So you lose 75% of your money, and you, let's say me and you have invested in that pension plan, and because the investment managers invested in these kind of things, your pension and your retirement is just magically disappearing into the air.
Gosh, all right. Here's another story, too, before we talk about the great taking that you might have a view on, too, and that is Treasury keeping off the books. $23 billion, that's off the books of the government, $23 billion climate cost. And that is the cost associated with meeting New Zealand's nationally determined contribution, the NDC, under the Paris Climate Agreement, that aims for a 50% reduction in net emissions below the 2005 level by 2030. So that's $23 billion being kept off the books. That's how much it's going to cost us because we signed up to this Paris Climate Agreement. Why would they, the Treasury say it doesn't meet accounting standards the way that amount is worked out, but and they're not including it. But maybe they're not including it because they don't think it's ever going to be spent.
I don't know the deep dive into that again, but essentially the Treasury is supposed to keep an eye on these things to make sure every government is doing the right thing with the taxpayer funds. But again, it will be, yeah, it will be spent or it will
but
be
it's a lot of money to
way.
We've signed up.
That's a hoax.
Well, over the period of time, I think the 10 years, it could be up to $300 billion worth. It costs New Zealand to meet our targets under the Paris Climate Agreement. Who would have signed up for that?
Well,
talk about tying your hands behind your back and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's the end of a cycle, mate. When you know you're going to default, let me give you an example. Let's say I just know I can't sustain my debt anymore. So the whole thing is I'm going to go to every bloody bank, get a credit card and spend as much as I can because I know I'm going to declare bankruptcy at the end of it. This is what's happened. Just think of it in the context of countries. They're overburdened. They have to clear out their balance sheet at some stage. Now, whether so the insiders will have a take, as you can see with the, well, let's not call it money laundering, but the money that's going to Ukraine and all that kind of stuff.
Well, let's call it money laundering. I'll call it that.
Well, indirectly it is, but it is, you know, we're helping them on the ground and we have to keep this up and this and that. And I don't know if you know, but Victoria Nuland, who's one of the people fighting the wrong fight, she's gone. But let's just say it's going to continue because there's geopolitical pressure on certain sides and all that kind of stuff. The whole game is rigged, mate. When you understand the money game itself is rigged. I just want to explain something. Just getting away from this article a little bit, but I'll explain it in what it is. The simple thing is, as I mentioned before, government is like a family. You earn $100, you should spend 80. After taxes, you should spend 80 and save 20. Okay? That's how you get rich. There's no other way of getting rich. But what has been instilled in the last two generations is you can get debt and use, yes, debt can be used constructively if you're a business and all that kind of stuff, and if there's positive cash flows. But people have been getting themselves into more and more debt, and this is the hyper-financialization. But if you're a government now, the government can only fund itself two ways. What is the government? I'm going to say this because I've read this in some books and the way people say it. It's a leech on society. The government does nothing else. It's a leech on society because it taxes our productive labor to say we're going to tax you and now spend the money as we see fit into the economy. Obviously, these promises of healthcare and all of that. So in the Western democracies, we think, oh, the government's actually making up roads and this and that and all that kind of stuff. But so let's say the government budget was $100. If it spends 80, we have a budget surplus. So we have $20 in savings. But if we spend 120, we have a budget deficit. Now, the only two ways the government can now fund this deficit is either tax us more, So to increase the tax rate to 120, or it can issue debt. Debt is your government bonds, which is just an IOU, but it's from the government. Say, I owe you this much money plus this much interest at the end of the term. Now, as it's an interest coupon attached, but interest coupon, even for governments, as interest rates were going down, the governments could afford paying this debt back. Now what has happened with interest rates going up, most governments are going to start feeling the pressure, especially someone like America is feeling the pressure because the debt is so massive. And as I said, as it gets exponential, that there's pressure on the reserve banks to start reducing interest rates. But what I'm just trying to get people into people's minds is these numbers are just going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. At least these are coming out into the open, because if they're spending 120 instead of spending 80, the money has to come from somewhere. And the reserve bank mouse clicks it and gives it indirectly via a circle through the banks or pension funds, who then can sell it back to the Reserve Bank. So the Reserve Bank monetizes this debt. It's magical fictional money that they spend into the economy, and things get more expensive, and inflation is another tax. So not only do you pay tax to the government upfront, then you pay GST on everything that is inflated away. So the government puts their hands in your pocket again and again and again. So this is just common sense. These numbers are going to keep getting bigger. And as I said, the government has an option. It can stop making false promises, which is where this will go. Eventually, governments will go, we can't sustain this. So now, sorry, guys, we're not going to pay this. And that's why the Great Reset is, because they don't want to take the blame. So they have to blame it on war. They would be like, we were going to do all of this, but because we've gone to war. So it's just a legalized Ponzi scheme, right? And that's
how I just don't see how any responsible leader of a country could sign their people up to such a huge amount of expenditure, probably a lot of it pure debt. It is all debt.
Because have your taxes really gone up recently? No, because they will tell you, we won't increase your taxes. Look, we're going to give you tax cuts. Let's just explain, where's the money coming from? Yeah, they're giving you tax cuts.
And there's nothing we can do anyway, because we're so small, we won't make any difference. And that it's just insane. Anyway, look,
whether you're small or not, mate, the whole thing is, the smallest is $10 debt as compared to $100 debt, as well as America has $1 trillion debt. It's just the number, but the underlying theory is still the same.
You're signing yourself up to spend money on doing something that makes no difference. So, you know, why would you? It's insane, actually. Anyway,
and yes, they borrowed it and they made these promises. Now, where is these $1 billion going to be spent for the green agenda? Into the New Zealand economy. Or let's say they're buying solar panels from China. It's going to be spent into the Chinese economy. What does it do? It's borrowed money that creates inflation here and abroad. So the money supply has increased because they magically created debt. They spent it into the economy. Government, there might be people who want the green agenda, might say, it's good because we can create solar panels.
We're doing great.
Wind farms. We're doing good. And they're earning money, but that money is still in the economy, which is then creating more inflation.
All right. Some of the wow moments we can expect from the great taking, just quickly. Because I'm just about to start to read this book.
Yeah, mate. The simple thing, this guy used to be a hedge fund manager, and he talks about his past and all that stuff and how his grandparents went through the Great Depression. And then he kind of, because he's worked in the financial industry, obviously he was a hedge fund manager compared to me, worked in banking. I understand how the system works. I can expose it. He's done it from the hedge fund, and he's going to deep dive on this. And there's a hidden agenda of the global elite to pretty much confiscate the world's collateral. Okay. Confiscate, right? This is it. So when you default on your house, what happens? The bank can mortgage your house and take it away from you. So this is it. When people have debt, it can go. The funny thing is this, where we think that I shouldn't default, so then the bank can't take it from me, as we had a question from a listener last week. That's great. But what he's highlighted in this book, what people don't realize, is this time it's got to do with almost everything they're going to try and take. So we saw the global financial crisis, one of those where people lost their houses and all of that stuff. But what he talks about is the dematerialization of security. So as I mentioned quickly last week, it's pretty much we used to have physical stock certificates, and now everything's electronic record keeping. I know even titles in Australia, in a couple of states, they used to be paper, now everything's electronic. So you don't have a personal attachment to your certain share certificate. And he goes into how central banks, and he shows leads of CIA, how they were placed in certain positions to get certain organizations up and running. But he also talks about how this has been centralized, as we've said, in the next collapse, they're trying to take us to one world government. Eventually, we'll get there after the next two tries. So what he's trying to say is you used to have clearing parties, or your shares used to be held by a broker, and it goes higher up the food chain, and they call central clearing parties, which maintain the clearing of all of these. So people who sell shares and buy shares and all that kind of stuff. Then he also takes you through something called Safe Harbor, which is the bankruptcy laws were changed during the global financial crisis, where he shows articles and the court case of JP Morgan Chase, who was the custodian of the client's assets. So the investors were holding their assets with JP Morgan. And then obviously on this side, JP Morgan was a protected class. So even though it's kind of, you've got to read the book to understand it, but it was literally fraud now allowed. Fraud is legalized through this system and through a court precedent where they can take your assets from you because the custodian part fails. And that's what he's talking about. If you think you have share certificates and bonds in your investment account, it doesn't matter because they've dematerialized it because you are not the actual owner anymore. The owner is your brokerage firm or these entities that are created. You just have a security entitlement. And in two of the examples he's actually showed where you will literally, based on these on the older numbers, but you will literally get 2 cents on the dollar back if you get anything back.
I'm just thinking with the deposit compensation scheme, and maybe they've thought of this, and maybe that's why the consultation is there. In the event of, you know, the bank having a run on the bank and they've got your money and you are an unsecured creditor, even with the DCS, could that money be taken by the bank as well?
Yes, and that's what I've kind of mentioned. It doesn't even matter, mate, the 100K. So if you have 500K, you might think, oh, I'll at least have 100K, I might lose 400. But I'm telling you, the 100K is in question as well, because when the way this is worded, the New Zealand scheme as well, and they've clearly shown you a diagram, we'll hold on to this much and then we'll release this much. Think back in 2013 or 2014, what happened in Cyprus. The government was in trouble. And their banks, people were told, even though they had a government guarantee, the depositors had to take a haircut. So they tried different things in different places. And this is what set up for all bank deposits. And David mentions not just the bonds and this, he also mentions that the deposits are fair play. Because what they did was during the global financial crisis, because government bailed out these things, they said, look, this time there's going to be no government bailout. So it's not on the government, it's not public funds, which means it pretty much take depositors' funds from the bank accounts, right? The one other thing also I want people to think about with this 100,000 DCS that we're talking about. So in America, there already is a thing called FDIC, which was set up after the Great Depression. The amount of funds they have in their account compared to the amount of deposits in bank accounts in America is a pittance. And this is what I'm saying. You, if you're lucky, you might get 2, 3, 5 cents, 10 cents. That is America's case. I don't know the New Zealand case, and we can't make these predictions ahead of time. But let's say, for example, if you're $1 million and only said, there you go, mate, there's your $100,000, you lose 900. Yeah. Now what has happened is we create an artificial depression. Deflation is what they keep saying, because supposedly, and he provides links in the book where the Federal Reserve head has actually admitted, this is Alan Greenspan, but he said, yeah, we caused the Great Depression to be worse. I don't know, we're sorry, we've learned our lesson. Now imagine about 100 years later, the same thing happens again. And I would ask people to just, and I can see through what's in this book, and we were already discussing this with some of my clients, because as I've mentioned before, read some books on the Great Depression. And today I'm just going to recommend one for the people read if they have time. It's by Benjamin Roth. And it's called The Great Depression, A Diary. So there's a gentleman who keeps notes of a diary that he's kept throughout the years, pre and post the depression. And I can tell you, even in that book, he clearly says he couldn't understand why some banks were allowed to open and some banks weren't. So now just coming back to read that book. Now just coming back to what David Webb is also saying was same thing his grandparents were wondering during the Great Depression was supposedly there was a bank holiday. They shut down all banks because something happened. And then they said, when they reopened, let's say there were, I'm just throwing a number. Let's say there were 5,000 banks in America or 10,000 banks in America. They only let's say 500 open. And if you had a mortgage at the other 9,500 banks where you had a mortgage and your deposits there, not only did you lose all your deposits, your mortgage wasn't forgiven. Okay. That mortgage was then taken over by the other banks that were allowed to remain open. They collected on your property and you still had to service that debt. So obviously,
Rocky, that's
broke.
Brutal.
And you had no money. Exactly. But this is what was allowed to do. Now, in those days, they did it because they said people were hoarding gold and money was backed by gold. So what did the Federal Reserve do? Well, Federal Reserve didn't do it. Supposedly, it's the government. The president said, everyone in America, hand over your gold because you guys are hoarding it. You guys are the bad guys. And that's why the Federal Reserve can't create more money. And that is making the depression worse. So he confiscated people's gold. And then what did the Federal Reserve do? They just hung on to the gold. They didn't create more money, which exasperated the problem and caused the depression to be worse than what it was supposed to be. So this was all designed. And yeah, you got to read that book, mate, The Great Depression, A Diary. Yep. And read this book as well, because it's out in the open. If you've got a thinking cell in, cells in your brain, you can connect this. The biggest thing I want people to realize is debt is not a real thing, mate, as we've understood already. It is not a real thing. It's an invention. It's a construct designed to take real things. Now, if you work your entire life and you've got savings or you've got your pension fund, let's say, for example, I haven't told you about the pension fund in that building right now. You worked your entire life, you get to 60, 65, and you got nothing to show for it, or you got 5 cents on the dollar to show for all your entire life, what are you going to be? You're going to be destitute. You're going to be broken. Everyone's going to be in depression. What are you going to do with that? You're going to then take up an app from the government, which will say, download this app, and we'll give everyone a UBI, because everyone's lost everything.
Yeah.
Here's your universal basic income, guys. We're just trying to help. Jump in. Now, if you're desperate and you can't feed your family, and 95% of the country is in the same position, and globally, what are you going to do? You're going to take the bloody CBDC. Now, back in at least the book that I read it, when you have a deflation, when you have, let's say, when in an inflationary boom, when people are creating, the governments and central banks are creating all this money, as I said, people in New Zealand think house prices only go up. Yeah, because they were creating so much money, the house prices were going up. So in an inflationary boom, people buy assets, real assets, to get rid of cash. In a deflationary or depression, people sell all assets and cash is king. That's where that saying comes from, cash is king. But in this case, so people used to go, in that book, you'd see people who went into government bonds, right, during the global, the Great Depression of the 1920s, they were saved. They were so rich because everyone lost everything, but people were in government bonds. Now, think about this 100 years later. If you go into government bonds and government's default, you got nothing. So there is no safe haven left for you to go into. And this is what I'm saying. It's this very tricky strategic time. Ooh. And it is not as simple as thinking, I'll just leave the money in a bank, or I'll just buy government bonds, because governments will default. Soft defaults are hard defaults. And that's what you got to see and move accordingly.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, by the time we've talked next, I would have read the book. So I'll give you my impressions on it. And we can talk about that next time.
Hey, I just thought I'd mention something. I completely forgotten about that. Talking to a couple of my clients who have trust set up in New Zealand, and they can see the writing on the wall, and their accountants seem to be not seeing the writing on the wall, and they're actually working against some of the clients. I thought, so obviously what this came up as an opportunity, which I was thinking in my head, and I'm just putting it on the radio show out there, because there have been a couple of accountants in New Zealand who had reach out to me prior as well, just saying, put me on your subscription list if that's the case. I want to make this kind of a community where if there are any accountants listening to this radio show, please reach out, because I have clients in New Zealand who want an accountant or a financial planner who's smart, who understands what's going on, because they are so into the system. And I'm thinking, just like we have created a community on BFF and RCR, maybe we can create a community for the financial side, so accountants can actually help clients rather than fight against clients to understand what is going on. That's just something I wanted to put out there. So please get in touch.
Give us the contact for you, Farzan.
Successsimplify.life. Flick me an email. I'll contact you accordingly. Thanks.
Okay, mate. And if you want to ask a question, get in touch to this Money Talks feature. 2057 text, email inbox at realitycheck.radio. Till next time, Farzan, thanks again.
Yeah, take care, mate. Pleasure.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.